Blog Talk Radio.
From the rainy, snowy, frozen Myrtle Beach. Well, no, just rainy. I just thought I'd see if anyone would laugh at that, and they didn't. Kind of like some of my jokes today. This is Dr. John Stamey, the pop culture star, the one and only. And boy, we got us a big, cool guest tonight. First of all, I want to introduce my co-hosts because they help make this adventure what it is. I'm a little too boring just by myself. I have to have them keep me straight. First of all, from Jacksonville, North Carolina, the curmudgeon of the East Coast, here he is, Dave Atwell. How you doing, Dave?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic. Just dealing with this on and off again weather. I guess we're getting the outside hemline of Bertha going through Myrtle Beach and everything. So we have the little intermittent rain and the wind gusts, that kind of stuff. So, therefore, I will be foregoing my delicious cigar from Godfather Cigars tonight because I don't feel like having my cigar and having to run back and forth because I'm getting wet. So I'll let my torches out back, and there's a little sprinkling rain, but it should be something I can handle for the next hour. And from what I understand, it's supposed to rain for the rest of the week. So, I mean, this time last year, everything was bone dry, and now it's marshland. So, funny how things work.
Exactly.
The outside, yeah. Hanging in there.
Boy, you ain't ever happy, are you?
Now, I got to ask you a question, Dave. You mentioned Bertha. Why are you talking about my grandmother that way?
Told every time I hear that name, I draw up because that was the hurricane where the tree had come through my house and landed on me back in 1996. That was
well, when it came through, did it say hello? May I? Maybe not.
I'll tell you what, it was a very sobering experience when you open your eyes and you look and all you see, you're laying in your living room floor and all you see is swirling clouds above you and you're going, hold on now, there wasn't a skylight in this house. And yeah, that damn tree came right through the house. You know, hurricanes we've all seen where the houses, you know, the trees will lay on a house, you know, will fall over on top of one, but this tree came into the house, and oddly enough, right where I was standing. So, yeah, that was fun. And then, of course, it took like a year to get the house fixed, so the house was like Valley Forge during the wintertime. But yeah,
okay. Well, I was just wondering. We were going to get into a seventh grade spat there. All right, you get a hall pass for that one. That's okay. Todd Saxon, how are you doing tonight from Studio I, Indianapolis? What's up?
I am outstanding to supernatural and ecstatic to be here, gentlemen. I'm going to start with a tangent quick. I really did make an effort to get my better half to call in just briefly to do the, you know, through the general intro session because 28 years ago today, that woman was silly enough to say, I do. So, yeah, officially, you know, we spent a lot of time running around before that. Been the better part of 30 years total. But that poor woman, she's so if any of you got, like, extra sympathy cards, hit me up. I'll tell you where to send me for the wife.
Well, I know one thing. You didn't say I do. You said, oh, thank God. Yep. See, I got it right. I'm psychic when I
do. Oh, most definitely. Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway,
things are going great, guys.
Yeah, we're glad they are. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, from Chicago, Illinois, weighing in at about 215 pounds. Did I get that right? Did I get that right, Chaz?
Close enough.
Okay, at 215 pounds from Chicago, Illinois, sat me sounding like a wrestling announcer again, like I used to be for years. Here he is, the one and only Chaz Moretti. Chaz, how you doing tonight? And welcome to Pop Culture Star.
Oh, I'm doing just phenomenal. I appreciate you guys having me on. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Dr. John. Todd, it's been a pleasure always when we've interacted. Dave, pleasure to meet you. You'll get annoyed with me soon enough, but it usually does.
Yeah, it's good to have you on tonight.
Now, Chaz, you better be careful about throwing those compliments around with Dave. You'll find out better.
Damn.
No.
Dave asked me one time, he said, John, with what all I said tonight, you're not going to like fire me, are you? I said, no, that's what I want. Be crazy. So I guess we'll keep you. Then I found out maybe we shouldn't have, but we're stuck with him anyway, and glad we are. And Chaz, it's great having you. I'm going to let you talk a little bit about wrestling and let our audience know what you do, what you've done, and what's made it a great thing for you. All joking aside, you are a well-known guy in the wrestling business. I'm very pleased to have you. So give us the lowdown on Chaz.
You know, always been a big fan of pop culture, always been a big fan of professional wrestling. I think that's how we all get started, is you're a fan first, and then you evolve and get into the business. And I'm lucky to say that I'm in one of the last original pop culture genres. I mean, professional wrestling has been around, God, since the carnival days and the dawn of television. I mean, when you take a look at television from the 40s and 50s, one thing that always remained was professional wrestling. And so I'm extremely pleased to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Well, that and Betty White.
Only you, Todd. Only you.
Betty White outlasted Moolah and Mae Young. That's doing some.
Yes, sir.
Now, Todd, just to quote the famous and dearly departed Bobby Heenan, do you realize that if you would have murdered your wife on your wedding night, you'd be out by now?
Man.
Food for thought.
Man.
That's great.
Look at Bobby Heenan. Way to pull him out. God, he has a great line.
I'll tell you guys one story that happened a couple of years ago during a wrestling show. I was managing in the main event, and the way the promoter and the way the booker wanted it to go, he wanted me to cut a promo after my client won the title. And he basically wanted me to act as if I won the title, which was fine. I mean, not a problem. It broke the protocol a little bit, but I did what he wanted me to do. So the match ahead of us went way over their allotted time slot, and one of the guys cut this long-winded promo that made absolutely no sense. So he comes back between the curtain. Now we're all pretty upset because we've got to get our match in without losing the crowd, and we've got our time cut into. So he looks at me and he goes, "That, my friend, is how you cut a promo." I said, "Oh, okay." So we go through our match. The title change happens like it was planned, or at least like I planned it to be. I mean, I don't know what the promoter thought, but I don't care. My client won. I get up there to cut the promo, and Todd, I took superstar Billy Graham's 1975 Madison Square Garden debut promo and made it into my own. The crowd ate it up. It acted like they never heard it before. Because it was what? It was 39 years removed? Okay, no problem. We get back through the curtain, and I look at the guy that went on before me is looking at me with his mouth open, and I just said, "Bro, you're good, but until you can pull superstar Billy Graham from 1975 out of your butt, keep learning."
I liked it.
Tore him up.
No, it's the fun part. That's the fun part. You know, I don't propose to be ignorant of the fact that professional wrestling has evolved into an entertainment form as opposed to the illusion of sport. And I'm not stupid enough to to ignore that fact, but I am a protector of the old ways because I believe that suspending the public's disbelief is still an important part of that entertainment. And I think far too often they want to break the fourth wall, so to speak. And occasionally it's entertaining and fun to do that. But when it happens on a weekly basis, it just gets to be to the point where you're like, why do I watch this nonsense?
Yeah, even the newest thing can get boring when it's no longer new. Absolutely.
Exactly. But, you know, I was lucky enough to get involved in professional wrestling by accident, like most of us do. And at the time I was 43 years old and about 320 pounds when I was approached to start training. And I said to myself, well, at this stage of my life and at this weight, I can either choose to be a very mediocre wrestler or I could choose to be a top flight manager. And I opted for choice number two. And I've studied all the greats that have come before me. I developed my persona. I won't say character because it's not. It's an extension of my personality. I've developed my persona based on 7 different influences across not only professional wrestling, but also music and acting. And the end result is Chaz Moretti. Do I still occasionally wrestle in a match? Absolutely. I'm in better shape now than I was when I was 30. Right now, I'm 6'2" and 218 pounds. And so, yeah, I have no issue with getting into the ring. I am a legit former boxer. I boxed an amateur as a teenager. So I know how to handle myself. And, I'm just enjoying a renaissance that I'm seeing with all the different programming and with the growing of the grassroots forms of the business. And, happy to be a part of it.
Well, independent wrestling, which you're calling the grassroots, I believe, it just gets more people involved. It gets more 18, 19-year-olds in the ring trying to jump off the third turnbuckle. It's great for wrestling. And I think that's what you were alluding to, right, Chaz?
It's great for the fans because the fans are what make any live event. It could be a play. It could be a music concert. It could be stand-up comedy, or it could be any type of sporting endeavor. I still treat my performances as quasi-sporting endeavors. For the fans, where can you go to get 2.5 hours worth of entertainment for $10?
Absolutely. For Dr. John David, there are people that have not got to go to those independent events that are at your local National Guard Armory and stuff like that. I remember them from when I was, this is how far back it goes. Johnny Powers was touring the high school gymnasiums.
Lord.
I probably gave a secret away age-wise there. The up-close and personal, the interaction, you can know people on a certain level, a little bit of seeing them back and forth, even get to know family members. It's a trip. I remember making sure I was standing and yelling and it looking like it was heat with Tank Dabney, and all I was yelling at him was, how's your dad doing? Tell him thank you for serving. Make sure he takes care of himself. And Tank was firing right back. And I just made it like I was mad at him. And it just, but where else can you relay a personal message while having fun?
Oh, I agree totally. But Dr. John, there's a double-edged sword, though, with the 18 and 19-year-olds getting involved in the business. The only issue that I have is the cookie-cutterness of some of these guys is going to get very boring and very old very quickly. A number of them, not a lot of them, but a number of them choose not to study. They choose not to study what came before them. They're only interested in their moveset. And to me, that's not what's going to help professional wrestling grow. Professional wrestling has always been a sport, in parentheses, based upon characters and based upon personas. And I think sometimes that gets lost.
True.
I tell you something that I think is lost now is people used to be able to, they would be able to tell a whole story in the ring. There's some old craft things that are just real well and truly missing now. Like you said, now it's a lot of folks, it's all about some of the moves, and sure, there's something to be said for if you get a couple high flyers and they're going out there 90 mile an hour all the way through the thing for the duration, that's impressive. But some of those old school guys that could tell a story in the ring, where you would see the work they would put into to set up their move, and the other guys, you know, would beat it one or two times, and then eventually the guy would get it in there. You know, the little things like that. Just there's an art that's missing.
Exactly. You know, wrestling to a body part is now a lost art. I mean, you would watch the Andersons, and you would watch the Masked Superstar, and you'd watch Baron von Raschke, Vern Gagne, and Nick Bockwinkel. They would concentrate on a body part and weaken that body part. Again, I'm using parentheses. Weaken that body part until they were able to get the proper advantage in order to win the match. And, you know, sometimes I think nowadays that's kind of lost in favor of the speed moves. And that's okay. You know, evolution is always going to happen. But I think there's something to be said for the appeal of the simplistic focusing on a body part.
I mean, you know, the pros could, in a one-hour match, they could trade arm bars for 50 minutes and make it the most exciting match in history. They could.
Oh, agreed. I mean, but, you know, again, it goes back to a lot of different things. I mean, when I was growing up in the early 70s, you know, we had what we liked to see as well. And if you went back and read, well, we couldn't watch because we didn't have the films. We could only read about, you know, you read about Strangler Lewis and George Lombus putting the headlock on for an hour. And you're thinking to yourself as a 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, oh, how boring is it to put a headlock on for an hour? But then, you know, we were used to seeing chain wrestling. We were used to seeing guys swapping holds for 35, 40 minutes. And thinking what a great thing this was. And then I remember distinctly back in 82 watching the original Tiger Mask wrestle. And he would hold combinations and sped it up. And you never saw that before in the United States. And that was something that, you know, made you sit up and take notice. And again, is there some of this high-flying stuff that's very good? Absolutely. Does every match need to be a high-flying affair? No, probably not, because like you said before, that which is novelty very quickly.
I mean, that's why there was only one Jimmy Snuka. Jimmy was the high flyer, and other people didn't do it back then, and that's why it was great to watch him do it, and then you could watch Andre just, you know, bear hug someone to death, and there was more of a notion of individualism. Right, Chaz?
Oh, I agree totally. You know, I was working the card, back in January, and two younger guys were on the show. Now, these were both big guys, 275, 280 each. And one of them almost killed himself trying to do a slingshot drop kick off the top rope. And I mean, it was just, if you shook your head. You know, they got done with the match, and afterward, they asked me, so what'd you think? I said, it was fine for what it was. I said, but I got to ask you a question. How did you not get hurt? And they kind of looked at me, and I said, which one of you guys is a cruiserweight? Neither one of us. So why are you attempting a slingshot drop kick and almost decapitating yourself when you fell off the ropes? You know, stick to what makes your persona believable. If you're a big, bruising, powerful 290-pound guy, that's what your focus should be. Now, do we have big guys that could move and go off the ropes? Yeah, look at Bam Bam Bigelow. He looked like he was 120 pounds. The guy was 320. But he's a rarity. He's not what everything is. But I want to get back to popular culture. I mean, you take a look at where it was in popular culture. It always had a pulse on what was happening in society. I mean, you look at the things going on in the late 60s and early 70s, and you had your Nazi heels and your Japanese heels, and that made sense back then because we were still fairly fresh off of World War II. And then you wound up with in the mid-70s, you wound up with your guys like superstar Billy Graham and a very young Nature Boy Ric Flair, and a lot of the guys that the Love Brothers, a lot of the guys that promoted the hippie scene, and which was not well received by mainstream America, but it made sense. It made sense for that time. I mean, if you were to try to dress somebody up now as an evil Japanese martial arts master or a Nazi, it just wouldn't make any type of sense in 2020 because our world's not that.
Oh, absolutely. The world stage. Look what was going on that allowed the Iron Sheik to be the Iron Sheik.
Agreed.
Tell me, Sheiky baby.
Yeah, and you know, you get guys like the Iron Sheik and Sheik Adnan El Casey, but they had legitimate backgrounds in their respective countries of Iran and Iraq. I mean, I read Adnan El Casey's book. He grew up with Saddam Hussein. They were friends. He was part of Saddam's security detail. All his quote-unquote matches that were held in Iraq, including a very famous match against Andre the Giant, had him winning. In fact, it was a part in the book that Casey actually got scared for Andre because Saddam showed him his sidearm and said, "I'll put a bullet in this fat head if something goes wrong." And he wasn't kidding. So, I mean, different time, different era.
Yeah. The, oh my gosh, all the great Russian wrestlers, if you will.
Oh, agree. I mean, you know, now, do you still have those Cold War elements? Yeah, I guess so. I guess you could still put somebody up from North Korea or from the People's Republic
China.
or from Russia and still get away with it. But I think as a populace, we've grown more sophisticated than what we were in decades past. I think our tastes no longer tolerate the stereotypes. So it's more difficult, I think, for a professional wrestler nowadays to develop a persona. It's got to be more in line with their own personality. But I think that even though it's more difficult, it still needs to be perpetuated. It still needs to be worked on.
I think a lot of them are missing the ability to talk. And I agree with you. I mean, I never thought I'd long for the day to see an armbar in the ring. But if you go back and you watch some of the Mid-Atlantic stuff that I grew up on, you know, when you had, you know, Bob Caudle doing the announcing, and you had, you know, Johnny Weaver in the ring with Mr. Wrestling 2 and that kind of stuff. And, I mean, it was headlocks, it was knee lifts, it was, you know, sleeper holds, all that kind of figure fours and everything. The jumping around does get a little old. Yeah, despite how exciting it is, but when it comes down to brass tacks, what I feel wrestling is missing now versus all of the other years is the mic. And I don't know if it's because, like we were speaking on just a moment ago, the political correctness, that they're a little guarded about what they're going to say, so they don't go out there. They purposely concentrate on what they're not going to say versus what they are going to say. It's hard for me to believe that there's just nobody out there that has the niche anymore. But
well, I think part of that problem is due to social media. I mean, I think that, you know, years ago, we'll use the Sheik for an example. He would basically vilify America. He'd spit at America and declare that Iran's number one. He would talk badly about American wrestlers and about the American people. You know, had he done that now as a young wrestler, as opposed to an older former wrestler, the internet community and to a greater extent the what I call the crybaby generation would lose
their
mind.
There you go. Spot on.
Butthurt.
Chaz, you're right there, because some of these people would get butthurt.
Yep.
You know, they do it with me. I mean, I'm not anybody. Be honest, guys. My name is known because I promote myself. And I promote myself to the best of my ability. But I'm not anybody. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not, you know, a worldwide phenomenon. But I make a quote, I'll say something. And there's times my wife will shake her head and she goes, "What are you doing?" "Nothing. I'm just posting." She goes, "You're starting trouble again, aren't you?" I said, "Yep."
Why?
It's because it's fun. And I'll
the funny thing is, you've actually posted about getting in trouble for your posting with your wife.
Oh, yeah. It took me 10 years to get in Facebook jail. I loved it. I was in Facebook jail for 24 hours. It took me 10 years. It was awesome. And I didn't put, it was a post that wasn't about wrestling that got me in trouble. I'm not a political person. I keep my politics to myself for the most part. I mean, there's some things that I think are nonsensical that I won't discuss here because they're boring. But I said something about Obama being evil. Boom. Facebook jail. Done. Thank you.
Nice.
Whatever. But what did I go and do? I had my wife about, well, he's in jail. And then I went and, you know, I went and used other forms of social media to make fun out of it and to promote that. And you know, it's all a part of getting your heat. And you know, the funny part is some of my colleagues, and I'll use that term loosely, are the ones that I get worked up the easiest. "Oh, everybody hates you. We wish you go away. We wish you quit. No one likes you." Good. That means I'm doing it right.
Exactly.
Spot on. There, you know. That's, you know, almost a David Lee Rothism. The worse the press, the better.
As P.T. Barnum once said, "Say whatever you want about me, but spell my name correctly."
I hear you.
Now,
yes, sir.
God, you'll appreciate this. At CAC, Dean Silverstone, God rest him, used to pull a running rib on me where he would spell my name wrong on my badge on purpose. He would spell Chaz with one Z instead of two. And the first year I questioned him and he played off on it. "Oh, I'm sorry, we'll fix it next year." And the next year the same thing, I looked at him with Dean. "Really? One more time?" "Chaz, we'll fix it. Come, I got the machine, come back." I come back. "Oh, the machine's not working, bro. Sorry, can't do it." Third year in a row, same thing. I said, "Dean, you're starting to get me upset now." He goes, "No, I'm going to print it up right now." But I didn't bother going, so I figured I was going to get stood up again. He goes, "I had your badge. You never came and got it." I said, "You're so lying. You didn't print up anything." And then earlier this year, Dean passed, and I got a hold of Darlene Priest, who's now taking over the Benevolent Fund and helping run a lot of what Dean did with getting the reservations and the badges printed up. And I told her what Dean did, and she goes, "Dean told me about that rib." I said, "Good. So for one more year, let's spell it incorrectly on purpose as a tribute to Dean." She goes, "You got it. I'll make sure it's spelled incorrectly." I said, "That's awesome." I mean, that's the camaraderie that the old-timers always had. I mean, something as simple as a letter on a name badge became a running inside joke for 4 years.
That's good stuff. That's the, I mean, that's real stuff, Chaz. It just is. Let me throw out a story on Chaz here. We met on WCW Retro, and I'd thrown out, you know, on there that, yeah, you know, I just moved up to Indy doing an independent job up here and, you know, away from the family and stuff. And the first thing I got was like, hey, just, you know, follow me on Facebook. If I'm in a, you see me doing an event that I'm near, hit me up. We'll get you taken care of. So I just wanted to throw, despite all the people that want to put Chaz in Facebook jail and all the people that hate him and stuff like that, only treated me like gold. I'm just saying, and I was just another cat when we met. So, yeah, so Chaz, big thanks, dude. And those, you know, if that painted you in the, if that ruins those people's image of you, sorry, dude.
Oh, I appreciate it, and it was my pleasure. God, I spent more money on comp tickets and T-shirt giveaways than I care to talk about. I mean, it was another joke that my wife used to always tell me. She says, you know why you're not good at selling your stuff? She goes, why? Because you don't sell it. You give it away. I said, whatever. As long as people enjoy it, who cares? You know, I make enough money to be very comfortable in life. And so if it makes an 8-year-old happy to have one of my T-shirts thrown out there, crowd, God bless. That makes me happy.
There we go. And that's let me throw that out about the smaller events and that too. The I'll be darned if look, in you go to a big venue, a big rock concert, they can see maybe 15, 20 rows out and isolate people. You know what? Those smaller events, they can pick people out of the crowd all the way around. And the interaction is spectacular. So, look, take it from a fan's point of view. When you get tired of that stuff, I have so much fun there, I can't stand it. I just can't stand it. And I, and it's just, it's great to see sometimes when things are a certain way, some of those guys, because they know the crowd and they know that they've seen the same people, you know, they're here every 2, 3, 4 months, whatever it happens to be there at the event, and the crowd is filled with those same cats, that sometimes they can actually just, you know, they can break character briefly, and they know they can get away with it in that venue because they had a particular message to pass, and they'll turn around, and they'll have that scowl on their face, and they'll be a major heel in a heartbeat. It's awesome. It's the best stuff ever.
You know, Todd, to dovetail off of that, two years ago I worked for a promotion called Global Professional Wrestling, which was in the south suburbs of Chicago. And there was a family of fans that I had known from, you know, coming out to various events that I had worked in the past. And their son, Eddie, invariably wait for the quiet moment right after the bell rang. And he'd yell out, Chaz, you suck. And first couple times I let him go, and I'd, you know, come back with a snarky comment and say something. And about maybe the fourth show that I was there, sure enough, true to form, Eddie came out and said, Chaz, you suck. And all I did, and I'll show you the intimate interaction that indie shows provide. All I did was look backward and look around at him and said, Eddie, not tonight, I'm not in the mood. That got more of a reaction than when I was yelling at him. Because I was able to pick him out of it.
Yes, you see? Let me tell you, I have no doubt that's a bloody true story because that's kind of the way it is. Absolutely one of the funniest lines I ever heard. I got to give it to Mike Mosley. This kid was giving him heat as he was walking by, and just little kid. And like you said, you know, roughly 6, 7, 8, somewhere around there. And I mean, the kid would be loud. Well, Mike Mosley looks at him and goes, you're so ugly, I could be your daddy. And kept going on. And my son and I on the other side of the ring, we're trying to hold each other up. We're about falling over in our chairs. One of the funniest lines I ever heard. And it was delivered like, you know, as angry as could possibly be. And it was one of the funniest lines ever. Mike Mosley.
I did one back in January. I was doing a promo in the ring, and the promoter's sister decided that she wanted to be involved in the show and started heckling me. and I stopped the promo and I told her flat out, I said, you know what? No matter what you do, no matter what you say to me, no matter how hard you try, you're still going home alone tonight. Instant reaction.
Hams. Hams. See, there is just stuff there. And I guarantee you, there was a version of myself and my son in a pair of seats trying to hold each other up and laughing our asses off.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee it.
But, you know, again, the interaction is what makes the art form not only believable but enjoyable for everybody. And everybody's like, well, how can you stand being booed every time? And I'll tell you what every other villain has said since the dawn of television. The more boos I hear, the better off I feel. That's how I know I'm doing it right.
Exactly. It's look, if they're going to put out that much energy for you, you're doing a good job as a heel, as opposed to if you're a heel and nobody's booing you, you're not doing real good.
Oh, agreed. The worst sound you can hear as a professional wrestling personality or performer is crickets, is nothing. The minute you hear nothing, yeah, you're in trouble.
Oh, that's the truth. And I've seen it happen doing a lot of indie shows. Oh, God.
But, you know, guys, I want to talk a little bit about the premise of the show, which is pop culture. You know, I've touched on a little bit about the differences in how wrestling has been related to pop culture. But, you know, in terms of my development, in terms of my outward persona, I mean, I draw heavily off of popular culture. I think personally, the man that has had best command of any stage ever in the history of the world was Freddie Mercury. Freddie Mercury was phenomenal.
And
he's a big influence on how I present myself when I'm out at the stage. You know, Ted DiBiase once gave me a piece of advice, and he said, kid, I don't care if there's 12 people or 12,000. When you walk through that curtain, you better make sure that they know you own the joint. And that's what Freddie did. When Freddie walked on stage, whether it was a small theater when they were starting out, an indoor theater, or God forbid, Wembley Stadium, when he walked out on that stage, everybody that was in that crowd knew that Freddie Mercury owned that place. And that's just, I think that's the lasting mark that he's left on pop culture. Music, I mean, obviously it's his work, but in terms of his command of the stage, which is oftentimes overlooked, I mean, I think that's one of the things that I always strive to be is to have the command of the crowd that Freddie has. And the one thing that I've learned from Bobby Heenan is that I will never do what they call work blue. I will never, ever, ever swear while I'm working or while I'm interacting with fans or cutting promo. I think if you have to use profanity in order to get your point across, well, then you probably lack a little education. And I don't really care if people don't like that comment, but it's true. I am one that will never swear. I'd rather figure out a clever insult than to swear at people. I think it's just vulgar.
Well, I got to tell you something, Chaz. Guy that showed me a little bit of the business, the Italian Stallion. You remember Gary Sabaugh?
I do. I've never met him, but I know of him.
Yeah, I was his announcer for 5 years. Now, you know I grew up the hard way. And here's what he said. He said, you can cuss and you can get a pop one time. But if you go off the top rope, you get a pop every time. It's called ability. And that's what it takes to make it in the business. And he's right. He just said the same thing you did. Yeah, every once in a while, you know, good old Stan would come up with something that made sense. And that really did.
You know, and I get a lot of guys that when I was first starting out, they say, oh, I don't need a manager. I can get over with the crowd. What do you do? And I would, one time I got upset with a guy, and I told him, I said, look, you've got to bump 5 times to get the same reaction I get by turning my head. I'll be here in 10 years, will you?
Indeed. There's, so there have been some legendary managers. There's, man, there is so much stuff you've touched on. There are so many. The guys will tell you I love doing the tangent thing. The best thing is there's not much I can do now with you touched on so much stuff. We'll be just going back to an earlier part of the conversation, Jazz. That's all spectacular. The you did talk about some of your early influences, and you told us about Freddie Mercury. And I want to throw this out there. I did get to see them live back in the day. They were, what a great doubleheader. It was none of these three-tier shows. Billy Squire opened up for them, and they were on the supporting the Flash Gordon stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Man, what a show, guys. I'm just telling you. And here's the thing. David Lee Roth was more exciting, more energetic live on stage, but he sure couldn't hold a candle vocal talent to Freddie Mercury. You know, I mean, there are different, and so that might be a good example. There are different presences on stage that can control a stage and own it. But the level of talent, unbelievable, Freddie Mercury. So who else were you digging that's an influence on you?
You know, my wrestling influences, Playboy Gary Hart, probably the biggest wrestling influence on me. Gary Hart was one of the more underrated managers, but he was a genius. I mean, Gary Hart, like you said, he would take guys that didn't speak English or didn't speak very good English, and he was their spokesperson. I mean, the great Kabuki, the great Muda, the one-man
yep.
gang. I mean, they were impressive with their in-ring talent, and what they didn't have in the ability to get their point across verbally, Gary Hart did for them. So, I mean, Gary Hart is definitely my biggest wrestling influence. I mean, is there a bit of Ric Flair in me? Of course there is. But before you have a bit of Ric Flair and you have a bit of Nature Boy Buddy Rogers in him, and a bit of Gorgeous George in all of us. And,
right.
So there's a lot of different influences. Everybody that knows me knows I'm a huge Superstar Billy Graham fan. I mean, to the point of sometimes they just, people roll their eyes and go, Jesus Christ, he's going to talk about Superstar again. But, my first wrestling event was Madison Square Garden in 75. You know, who do I see wrestle? Superstar Billy Graham. Fell in love with the guy. You know, my parents, we moved here to Chicago in 76. So I didn't have a chance to, we had to read the wrestling magazine because we didn't have cable at that time. So, I didn't get a chance to see the Backman era or see Snuka and Backman go through their trilogy. You read about it. Later on, I got to see Backman lose when cable finally came around. I got to see Backman lose to the Iron Sheik. Oh, that would never happen. 6.5 years as champ. So we got to watch, but I got to see the stuff here with the AWA. And I got to see Nick Bockwinkel, who, God, was he silky smooth in the ring. Nobody better at telling the story.
Yes.
Hitting his point across in the ring. And, again, Bockwinkel was one of the greatest talkers in the world, but he had Bobby Heenan with him. Did he need him? No. Did it make the product that much better? Absolutely it did. Absolutely it did. I got to see the rise of the Road Warriors with Paul Ellering. And everybody understands and knows Paul Ellering as a manager, but not a lot of people understand that Paul Ellering was a hell of a wrestler himself before he got hurt, before he injured his back. But what a physique he had. So, I mean, I think I'm getting off on a bit of a tangent, but, And then when I used to work for my uncle, who owned a sports agency, and I won't get into the details of that because there's a lot of confidentiality through all of that. And so, is there a bit of, an evil Jerry Maguire in me? Sure. I mean, I worked in that industry before I got involved, before I left college. As a college intern, I worked for my uncle. You know, when I got out, I didn't work too much in the industry anymore. I started branching out and doing my own thing. But yeah, I always said to myself, you know, the manager has evolved as well. And so when I got involved in professional wrestling, the first time I was announced as a manager, and I lost my mind. I grabbed the microphone from the ring announcer and I told him, I said, look, let me explain something to you real quick, and I'll do it in terms that you could understand. A manager is a filthy, disgusting, flesh-eating parasite, the likes of which I will never fully tell you about. I'm an agent. Instant heat.
Killer. Just killer, dude. You use some of that wisdom of life where you take, you know, those real life experiences, incorporate it, and use those fun things. And like you talked about, one of those, you know, you caught one of those great all-time events there in 75 and got to see it live. Dude, it wouldn't have been much of an event if it didn't impact you like it did. Just saying, Chaz.
Absolutely. I mean, that event impacted me. God, there was an event, you know, we talked about in the 70s how in some towns it was very easy for families to go to wrestling cards and wrestling events. In Chicago, that wasn't the case. I mean, I hate to say it, but the International Amphitheater was a bloodbath. It was a mean scene in there. There were more fights in the stands than there were in the ring. One night there were shots fired at Bobby Heenan. So, I mean, you know, the Road Warriors had a fight there with that to the dressing room one time, throwing chairs and just swinging to get themselves back. So that really wasn't a very family-friendly type of environment growing up. I got to go to one match in 76, and I got to see Dick the Bruiser and Ernie Ladd in main event in a Texas Death Match, you know, otherwise known as Last Man Standing now. You know, but everything's involved. I like the fact that a family of four can go to a professional wrestling show right now, be entertained for 2.5+ hours, eat, drink, and watch the show for less than $50 total.
True. You can, I may have to really check out more of the menus here because we were paying $15 down there with the advance tickets, but that was still awesome. We were killing it. The bottom line is try to go to a movie theater and the thing is, let me tell you, the movie theater, we all know that how long are the commercials up front? You've got about a half an hour of that stuff now, and that's not an exaggeration.
Nope.
And you know, you want to go in there early so you can get your seat, that kind of stuff. And you hope that people don't sit right in front of you, Dave. He's got a story on that. You go in there, do that. Dude, I went in alone and I didn't get any meal or anything like that. And I was still like $20 to go watch Godzilla.
Yeah.
And that,
yeah.
You know, and I had that much of the commercials. Sure, there's commercials with the intermission or whatever, but you know what? There's all the interaction with the intermission. That stuff is awesome. You can go to, you know, there's an event coming later in the match or whatever, so you can go to someone and, you know, remind them, me being me, I'll, you know, remind them, hey, be safe in there, but you know, frankly, I hope you get your ass kicked when you're talking to the heel or if he's wrestling one of your favorite guys. Or, even better, when you have your favorite heel and your favorite face and you know they're going to be the showcase match, man, at those events that are so close and personal, those are kind of some of the hardest things ever because you're like, dude, number one, I don't want anybody to have an oops and get hurt. But, man, you love both the guys because if a heel's right, and especially at these smaller events, you learn to love these guys. Just saying.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I don't do, and it's not because I want to be considered a prima donna or anything, but the one thing I don't do as a nod to the tradition of kayfabe and the tradition of professional wrestling is I don't go out during intermission. I stay in the locker room during intermission. And it's not that I don't want to see people because I'm approachable after the event's over. I don't have a problem with that. But during the event, during the show, you won't see me. I'm not a believer of the fan favorite and the villain. Again, I'm going to use old terms because I'm still, you know, an old fan. I don't believe in seeing the fan favorite and the villain interacting within 6 feet of each other, 5 feet of each other, and not tearing each other apart. I just think you're doing
right. That should not be the case. They should definitely be staged on different sides of the hall.
You know, there's a great story about that, Jazz, and I don't know if you've heard this one or not. This is a Stroh story, but he said there was going to be wrestling at the high school gym on Friday night, and the whole bunch arrived at the same time. All the heels and all the faces were just mixed all in together, and some German dude comes walking out and said, "Hey, boys, where's the ring going to be?" You know, it just ruined it all for everybody. They found out he was just some Southern hick like me. So it was great. Now, Dave, Todd mentioned your story about sitting behind. Can you share that for Chaz? I think it's a great pop culture story. Can you do that, kind sir?
Yeah, certainly. It's nothing spectacular. It's just the way things work in today's society. Me and my son's vision impaired. So can he see? Yes. But, you know, does he have to work harder at it than the rest of us? Yes, he does. So when we go to the movie theater, I always like to go when nobody else is going to be there. So that way he can find that sweet spot in the movie theater and say, "Yeah, Pop, I can see the screen. Let's go at it," you know. I'm old. I ain't going to see it any damn way, so it don't matter. I just want to make sure he's good to go. So we went to a 9 a.m. showing of this last Star Wars flick that came out. And, you know, I'm not particularly crazy about getting up that early in the morning on a day off, but nevertheless, I did it, you know. Got to be at the movie theater. We get out there. And it's me and Rob and another couple right there at the door. So they let us in. Of course, you know, I hear the guy over there with his girl saying, "Oh, yeah, Star Wars." I'm like, okay, well, you know, we can't have the whole theater to ourselves, you know. And, oh, Jesus, just got caught in a downpour, guys.
Uh-oh.
Thanks, Bertha. Yeah, let me put out my torches while I'm talking. Well, the couple goes sits way up top and in the theater, and I said, "All right, cool, cool." And I told Rob, I said, "So where do you want to sit, buddy?" And he finds a few spots, and he goes, "Ah, here you go. This one works, Dad." I said, "Okay, cool." So we sit there through God knows how many previews and everything. Well, then these four women come in, all of a large nature, not that I'm going to hold it against them, but I didn't bring my harpoon gun with me that afternoon, but nevertheless.
what he's saying is they are the ones that, until they sing, the opera ain't over.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And there's got to be 150 empty seats in this theater. And what did they do? They sit in the four seats right in front of me and my son. And I'm looking around, you know, and I'm saying, you know, and Rob, he's a chip off the old block. Rob looked at me, just goes, "Really?" But, you know, what's so funny about this coronavirus thing is, it breaks down to three basic things. Wash your hands. If you're sick, stay away from people. And quit climbing in people's pockets. Respect their space. And it's three things that we should have been doing all along. It didn't take some pandemic to wake us up to it. And every time I think about it, I think about those four fat ladies that came in. And, I mean, why? And I said it in the show before, I could have been Charles Manson training my apprentice. And these four, you know,
yeah.
you never can tell who you're standing next to, so don't go out of your way to do it. And, yeah, they got right there.
Both at well. I love it.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. That was I'm one of those big personal space people, even before this thing hit. And I'll never forget. Hey, I don't know, you guys have probably experienced it too. When you're in a store and you go to punch your stuff into the little keypad with your card, and you notice the light change, and you look to your left, and a person is standing right next to you when you're punching in your PIN number.
Yes.
And, yo, Dale, she gets on me all the time about it. I'll look at him and go, did you need to get anything? Yo, like, you want to tack it on to my order? It's no sweat, you know. Go right ahead. Since you're right here on top of me, go right ahead.
Oh, my
but,
God.
But, yeah. I'm gonna
add to that a little bit. You know, Illinois, after 2.5 months, decided to make face masks mandatory. I have my opinions on that. It's not for this forum. But the very day that it happened, I happened to go.
Oh, yes, it is, by the way, Chaz.
Yeah.
Speak your mind, brother.
I happened to go into a grocery store. Now, I've been, I'm not going to lie, I'm going through wrestling withdrawal because I haven't performed in front of a crowd since January. So I went in with Bray Wyatt's music queued up on my Amazon Music on my phone in my pocket. I walk in. I have a mask in my pocket because I'm not an insensitive ass. But I am a heel, so I'm going to push the boundaries. I walked in with the mask in my pocket, not on. I go, walked right in like I owned the place, and did my deal and got the things and the few items that I needed, and went through checkout and uncharacteristically, strangely polite, you know, and checked out and got paid and got, you know, made my payment for my groceries, and I'm leaving my bag out and I'm looking at the Butthurt Nation. Staring at me like I had four heads. Not saying anything. I was prepared. And the store manager comes up to me. I'm literally three steps from the door. And the store manager comes up to me and he says, sir, where's your mask? And I looked at him. I got my finger on the play button. I looked at him and I said, why live in fear? You already let me in. And I hit the play button and Bray Wyatt's music came out. I had this smile on my face as I walked out very slowly. The bagger popped. The bagger started clapping because he was a wrestling fan. God bless that kid. Justin, you're all right. You're listening. You're all right.
Good stuff.
That would have been cliched at a wrestling show, but you know, do it in real life, and they're losing their minds. I'm sure somebody tweeted about the Italian jerk that didn't wear his mask in the store. Yeah, whatever.
Hey, well, all I got to say is you remind me, you and Dave reminded me of the following fact. This Monday night, you know, we have Murder 1-2-3, and we talk about the most despicable people in the world. And we had probably there in the top three. We talked about Jeffrey Dahmer. That's a sweetheart. If you ever, and Chaz, you were telling me that you were affected by Dahmer one time. What was that? You were telling me the other night.
Indirectly, here's what happened. In Milwaukee, they have a festival park called the Henry Meyer Festival Park, which is a great facility because all of the ethnic festivals and Summerfest and their music festivals are all held in a park that's built specifically for that purpose. So there's actual bathrooms and not portals, and, you know, the tents are permanent and it's all paved. It's really nice, right along the lakefront. And we had gone to Italian Fest and we were driving home, and usually there's a lot of traffic getting onto the interstate. But that night there was an unduly amount of traffic getting on the interstate, and we had to drive past, we drove past a police event. siren, and then three squad cars, you know, the lights going, everything else, and we had an inch by this event, and they were, looks like they were questioning or about to arrest somebody. I don't know who it was. It was two guys. Turns out it was Dahmer and the kid from Wallace that he later killed. Drove right past them. Didn't know who they were.
Wow.
Dude.
Well, here's what I was going to say about it. It's a shame that they didn't have coronavirus back then, or Dahmer would have killed fewer people. Because they'd have all stayed 6 feet away from him.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, again,
that was a terrible joke. I heard the big, when that one came out. I'm sorry.
We were talking about
was I that audible? Sorry.
Yeah, well, what did you say, Chaz?
Oh, Chicago, we're a breeding ground for nut jobs and psychos. I mean, take a look at the H.H. Holmes, Richard Speck.
Oh, one of the legends.
I mean, we are,
yeah,
we are with
Beck.
This town is just batshit crazy. It always has been.
We're supposed to do Richard's. Hey, let me ask you this, Chaz. I'll wear out my welcome real hard, just worse than anybody. Since you're up there from Chicago, will you come on Murder 123 when we do Richard Speck?
Sure, I will. In fact, I'll have my wife come on as well, because she was indirectly affected by Richard Speck, and I'll let her tell that story.
Okay, great.
Oh,
we'll do
man.
We'll do Richard Speck, not this coming week, because we got to finish up Jeffrey Dahmer, and then the next week we'll do Richard Speck. That'll be cool. Everybody will be excited. We like it when we have people that have some firsthand knowledge of these despicable deplorables. And
Just Chicago be a violent, crazy place if it's a gun-free area.
But they've got great writers like Jesse Smollett. Sorry.
It was built on an onion patch.
That was well played.
Go any further? We're always being programmed into this. Look for the silver lining. But there's one pop culture silver lining that COVID-19 has given us, and isn't it great? The drive-in theater is back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, well, yes.
Dude. Yes, dude. On so many levels, because
I would like to think
that all of us were teenagers dating the drive-in theaters, just saying. The next thing is, remember when the speakers didn't work? And you were, oh, God, vehicles were much less efficient then. How many people were getting their batteries jumped leaving the drive-in theater back in the day?
Well, I could imagine. But, you know, I've never seen more excitement recently over people lining up 3 hours in advance to see Billy Madison and Tommy Boy in a double feature.
Well, really Tommy not. Boy, for crying out loud, that was one of the greatest flicks ever made. I would stand in line for that, you know.
They're both great, but they're not first-run anymore. And,
yeah.
You know, you look at the industry being all about the first-run movies, but yet there were 300 cars that packed suburban Chicago drive-in at $40 a pop to see movies that were, what, 20-plus years old?
Yeah,
I think, you know, on a pop culture tangent, I think that's phenomenal. I'm glad the drive-ins are back. I hope they stay long after this is over. I think, you know, one of the things that I always question in my head is people are checking up on each other, and that's great. And people are messaging, and people are trying to stay in contact. That's phenomenal. And the drive-ins are back, and family dinners are back, and all that's wonderful, but is all that going to last once this, and I'm going to say it, once this nonsense is over?
Yeah, one thing that I've kind of seen that I've appreciated, now I don't know if it'll stay, but the workplace mentality, and Todd will tell you, you know, he's worked with me long enough. You know, there were times when I would come in 05 in the morning and still would be there, you know, 2100 at night. Why? Because I was told that if I left the building, it would fall apart. And now, these places, they're noticing an uptick in productivity for the people that are home working, that they're actually getting more done from working at the house than what they are working in the office. The morale's better. And, and that's a big part of it, too, is the fact that when you're able to go home and eat with your family, for those of us that came up in the 70s and 80s, the thought of not eating every night at the same time with our family is just totally over our heads because that was just culture. Unfortunately, our children now, you got parents working all which way, 2 jobs, 10 jobs, or working days or working nights. They're, closing Monday, opening Tuesday, working a mid Wednesday, that kind of stuff. The spaghetti scheduling, is all over the place. So the ability to actually sit down and enjoy a meal together, I think what it's done, and to be honest with you too, you guys will remember the blue laws. And I carry on about this all the time, is the blue laws back in the day, everything was shut down on Sunday. The only things that were open, hospitals, fire department, police department. And, people do that. Wow, you got to be kidding me, Dave. How do people get gas? They didn't need gas because they made damn certain they had a full tank on Saturday.
Well,
what if they were traveling? They weren't traveling on Saturday. They didn't travel on Sunday. That was the whole thing. The blue laws made it where
if they did, they were still traveling in another family's house and that. But like you said, they had the freaking intellect, sagacity to plan ahead.
Right. And with this stuff here, folks have had to dial in and they've had to get out of their comfort zone. They've had to mature. They've had to prioritize. And, now granted, it's still amazing how you could walk into a grocery store and see people, mask, gloves, the whole Dustin Hoffman outbreak suit. But then they come and they stand right on top of a guy or they walk down the wrong direction of a one-way aisle. So, but I think a lot of time, I think what this done, if there's a positive thing we can pull out of it, is the fact that it made everybody stop for a minute. It made the rat race stop. And people, when I use the term people, society, corporate America, and everything else, stopped and looked and said, wow, maybe we have been too rushed. Maybe we are pushing it a little too hard. And it's going to be interesting when things go back to full speed, how, take for instance like the Walmarts. And I blame Walmart a lot of times for a lot of society's problems because they were the guys who invented the 24-hour stores. Before they started doing that mess 25 years ago, people made sure they had plenty of diapers at the house. They made sure they had baby milk. They made sure they had all the stuff they needed. And if they didn't have it, they toughed it through until 06 the next morning when something opened up.
I'm with you.
God's sake. So you're starting to see now a lot of these Walmarts, they're quietly eliminating their 24-hour gig, and they're starting to shut down at 2,200, 2,300. And it's part of this. I still think part of this, they're going to stop and really look at operations and, morale and everything else. And perhaps we may be able to glean some positive things out of this ridiculous stuff.
I want to throw in another thing on the whole tech side of that. The where I work is almost exclusively telework right now. We have had a lot of money spent on travel with our business. traditionally for various events. And I'm going to say up front, some of the unique boondoggles, I believe, will still happen. But they're finding that when we have a symposium that we would send people to, that now they can do like much of the online training that many a business do with a bloody PowerPoint presentation and whatnot. If people are not seeing a cost saving, yes, you are spending more to build up your IT infrastructure, absolutely. But how much are you saving on travel and per diem every year?
Let me give you an example with the professional wrestling. There is a promotion up in Wisconsin that has gotten the idea of maintaining their presence during this time by the use of video, by the use of TikTok, by the use of Instagram. And I'm talking about Bruce City Wrestling. Frankie DeFalco runs a phenomenal promotion up there. And they kept their name and they kept their fans engaged through these various methods. And, you know, the one thing Frank always prided himself on was the idea of pre-taped promos and video packages to help showcase his talent. You know, it's a small promotion. Does he increase his cost by having to have someone come in and film, pre-taped promotions and pre-taped segments and have video on a screen and buy the screen and buy the sound that goes with it? Sure it does. But in the long run, like you said, does it increase the productivity of his performers? Yes, it does. Does it increase does it increase the reaction of his fans? Yes, it does. Does it help in retention of his customer base? Absolutely. So, I mean, there's a lot of correlations to that. And, you know, you get a lot of, like you said, you get a lot of people crabbing and moaning and saying, oh, well, you know, I don't know how we're going to survive or if we're going to survive. Well, you're either going to do what the Marines always said. You're going to adapt and overcome. And if you can't do it, you're not going to be alone. So, I mean, you know, kudos to Frankie DeFalco and Bruce City for working their way through the COVID-19 pandemic productively, and now they're going to run June 20th. All right, Wisconsin's wide open. They're able to run June 20th. They're going to abide by what the new rules are, and they're going to give their fans a great show as they always do. I mean, there's other promotions that do the same thing. I'm really not trying to leave anybody out. POW Entertainment has been where I actually got my start. Has been chomping at the bit to get back to what they're doing, and they always did a YouTube segment called the POW Webcast, which was nothing but promo segments, and that's how I learned to do a professional wrestling promo. And Jimmy Blaze does a wonderful job down there, and Steve Boz over at Chicago Style Wrestling, they've invested heavily in production to enhance that. But I think, you know, technology for the sake of technology may not be always the right answer, but technology to enhance and to build up your existing product is utterly necessary.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're gold mine. You hit on something that just blew my mind. You referenced the Marines there. You know, back in 1995, when I walked into that Marine Corps recruiter's office, a plaque he had on it was maximum utilization of available resources. Staff Sergeant John Pete, last time was Mass Sergeant when we were stationed in North Carolina, that was a plaque on his desk. Maximum utilization of available resources. And I honestly think a lot of people are doing this. And I'll throw this out here, just because you brought up the Marines, and I'll toot my own bloody horn. You know, it was I retired May 30th or May 31st, as it was, in 2005 from the Marine Corps. And all I can say is that I just started my third year supporting the Marine Corps in my retired life after a long time away from them. So I'm one of the most blessed people on the earth.
Well, that's awesome, Todd. We know that. Well, I'll tell you what, the British lady is going to be singing her song in just a minute, and I want to give everybody a minute to say good night, and what have you got to plug? So I'm going to go with Dave Atwell, then I'm going to go with Todd, and then our guest, Chaz Moretti. Dave Atwell, what have you got to plug or say something good about? Me?
Oh, just a happy anniversary to Todd and Yuki, lovely couple and everything. It's great to see them celebrating another year, despite the fact being some distance apart from one another. But if you ever get a chance to hang out with them, they're a fantastic couple. And, moreover, have produced a fantastic bunch of family, too, because they got a lot to be proud of. Two fantastic children. They've done their part. So when they leave this earth, they've made the place a lot better than what they got it in. So, amen. Congratulations. And if you were here, I'd tell you to lay some pipe and get off the show. But stay where you're at. Keep your hands to yourself.
All right. That's a good one. Okay, Todd. What is your minute?
Well, yeah, I was going to go with the anniversary, and there's a lot lost there. Thanks, Dave. No, seriously, thanks, Dave. Look, Yukiko Saxon, she took a flyer back on me, or on me back in the day, and we started hanging out in 1990. And this woman, not only did she start hanging out with me, despite me, has continued to do so. Again, today, officially 28 years. Look, if anybody ought to be considered a saint, it's her. I couldn't keep trying. You're why I keep trying, Yuki. Thank you. Love you. I love you always. And always. Remember the spelling. First one is two words. A-L-L space W-A-Y-S. And the second one is always, as in the duration. So, yeah. So, all about Yuki. Best wife and mom a dude could ask for.
Well, that's great. Well, now I'm gonna tell you what, Todd. Your job before our next event is to make sure Yuki listens to that on this podcast. Okay?
I sent her the link before the show started, brother.
Well, that's good. Well, we're proud of you for having 28 great years. And Chaz, what have you got to say?
Well, again, happy anniversary, Todd. God bless the Marine Corps. I was never a Marine, but I'm a Marine Corps brat. My dad served back in the early 60s and taught me a lot of the Marine Corps ways and disciplines. So God bless the Corps. And a couple of plugs to put in. If you're a fan of wrestling and you want to listen to another phenomenal podcast regarding professional wrestling and delving into a little bit of the history as well as what's going on right now and what could happen in the future, please tune into WCW Retro with the Stro. Tomorrow on Blog Talk Radio, I'll be listing the link in order to get to it on the VOC Nation. So I want to plug my buddy Stro, and I want to thank you guys and thank you, Dr. John, for inviting me on. And anytime you'd love to have me, I'd love to come back. And one thing I would love to discuss, if you ever have me back on again, I would love to discuss the impact of the Batman television show on our culture.
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, damn right. We'll do that sooner than later, Chaz. Absolutely.
No more wrestling. We did wrestling, brothers. Let's do Batman next. let's be pretty
okay.
Bad
you got. In fact, I'm writing this down, and be sure to listen to Chaz and his wife in two Mondays from this one coming up, and we're gonna talk about the killer Richard Speck. That'll be great. So this is Dr. John from beautiful sunny Myrtle Beach, where it is raining as hard as it can be. Thanks a lot for being here on Pop Culture Stars. Thanks to our panelists, Todd Saxon and the curmudgeon, Dave Atwell. No, Dave, you still got your job, okay? You have no choice.
I didn't piss anybody off tonight.
Yeah, you should have pissed more people off. And, Chaz, you were great as usual. I look forward to seeing you, Chaz, on Thursday night, WCW Retro. I'll show up at 9:30 as usual. Then I'll have to run on off to Scarycast. We got some dude that's into really major darky affairs, which used to mean CIA and Bigfoot. So be sure to watch us. Take care. We'll see you next week, 9 p.m. Eastern time on the one, the only Pop Culture Stars. Bye, y'all.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for hanging with us, Chaz.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Everyone on board.
Thank you. Take care.